today's passage, which is Daniel chapter 1. Please turn to the Old Testament book of Daniel. We come to Daniel chapter 1. And although our focus is upon verse 8 onwards, we read from the beginning, Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1, starting from verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Aspinas, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, and to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, "I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink. For why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king." So Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days, and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants." So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. At the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away the portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink, and gave them vegetables. As for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they served before the king, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding, about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. We come to Daniel chapter 1. Our focus this morning is verse 8 to the end of the chapter. But we will have to revise a little of what we have learned in the introduction given to the book yesterday in order to set the scene. Remember that Nebuchadnezzar, king of the mighty empire, remember not the country, the empire. So he has already conquered many other nations. So King Nebuchadnezzar, whose capital was based in Babylon, Shinar, the summer palace. So there, in that general region of today's Iraq, They were a mighty empire at that time. So they came down to attack Jerusalem in the year 605 BC. So remember, BC, before the time of Christ, we count downwards. So the number of the years gets smaller and smaller. So in 605, there was an attack. And in the next 23 years, there were three more attacks upon Jerusalem. The reason was because as the emperor conquered another nation, he would leave that nation to be a subject. And if you are quiet, you are nice, you just listen, then you are all right. Every year come and pay tribute. That is okay. Because what is the point of destroying you? And what is the point of all the time fighting? They all just want recognition. You subdue yourself to us, pay tribute, listen to us, and that you are all right. But the king in Jerusalem there did not want to listen. He plotted, and he thought that the other superpower was Egypt in the south. So he thought that he could get help from there, get encouragement from there. And all this was noted by the king of Babylon, and they came down to attack to teach them a lesson. So one time, two times, and then finally in 586 BC, he destroyed Jerusalem thoroughly and took away the last batch of people. And it was the policy of the Babylonian Empire to take away one people from one nation and scatter them everywhere so that you wouldn't get together and plan and plot. See? And they would take other people and put them in the land that you have been taken. So in that way, the remaining people and the people from foreign lands would come and intermarry. Okay? And this policy is still being practiced today, even in peace times. They call it by different names, nice sounding names, perhaps economic policy of some kind, and then they will bring people from one place or one island to another in order to balance up the population, all for political reasons. So we understand that there was practice at that time. And Daniel was among the young people, the cream of the society in Jerusalem, who was taken away in that first batch. That was in the year 605 BC. See? And they were given 3 years of university education in the topmost university, where their top professors were all there. 3 years of solid training in various fields of studies, astrology, mathematics, geology, whatever, philosophy, see, anthropology. They studied all this. And these people would be used by the king of Babylon to rule over the vast empire, the cream from everywhere. Why not? You say. So we say the people are attracting the brains. Some country have brain drain, but others have brain gain. You say. So the country that gains, of course, in due time, before too long, in one generation, you begin to see the difference. The economy will get steadier and begin to progress. See? Then the research part will be strengthened. See? Then original thoughts will come from the thinkers and writers. See? Some various areas of society will be strengthened. There will be those who will be writing articles in the newspapers. There will be those who produce books. There will be those teaching in the universities. There will be those who are scientists on the ground. And everywhere you discover very soon the strength of the country can be felt, you see. So Nebuchadnezzar had that policy. Some he retained in Babylon itself to be his top advisors. Give me your opinion about your country, you say. So that way he has the best brains around him. That was the policy. And they were given special food, and because Babylon was sold over to idolatry, and they were very religious. And we must understand that being religious is different from being spiritual. Often people confuse the two. See? And there are many people who are religious. They have a form of religion, but without power in them. You know, the power of the Holy Spirit, of the true God, is not in them. So that's why there's a lot of action, formal action. Like the Pharisees, they keep to rules, regulations. Fast how many times a day, pray how many times a day, you see. But their thoughts are full of filth, you see. Yes, and they are very wicked. They are capable of all this, hiding behind this veneer of religion. So, sad to say, this feature enters into the church. And don't be surprised if there are some individuals here who only have an external show of religion, but no true spirituality. So we must be very careful to see the difference. So the purpose of preaching is to show to you the difference, so that this sort of things can be understood, so that you don't get led astray. You become a religious person, but you are not a spiritual person. And that is not good. What is the point of getting baptized? Calling yourself a Christian when there is no spiritual life in you. Remember this? Empty. See? What is the point of an empty tin? It sounds loud, looks nice. See? But there's no content. See? No right content. You say, I know many things. Oh, you know the things of this world from a natural point of view. But spiritual things are spiritually discerned. So unless you are transformed from within, you wouldn't appreciate spiritual things. Just like the blind man who does not appreciate truly the colors of sunset until his head is knocked, his eyes are opened, then he begins to see what we have been telling him all this while. So here you must distinguish the difference. So the nation of the Empire of Babylon was like that, very religious. And because it's so religious, see, the word God and prayer and so on, fasting, all is always on their lips. See, and perhaps you see how many times they knock their head on the ground. You can see the mark here, the mark of the beast, we say. But to them is the mark of piety. See, you understand? Look around. See, and sometimes you see those people who are portrayed on the newspapers and mass media. You say, look there, that mark there. Don't you understand that? They've been knocking their heads on the ground. They appear so religious. But remember, spirituality, true spirituality is what we look for, not mere religion. And because the country was so religious, everything they did was in the name of their gods, to the extent that even the food served to Daniel and his friends had been offered to the idols. And to the people, it was just natural, it's to be expected. Before you eat anything, offer the food to their gods. See? But to Daniel, who is a truly spiritual minded man, you say, I wouldn't want to do this. I don't worship those gods. I worship only the true God, Jehovah, the one who created the heavens and the earth. See? The God who made a covenant, see, with our fathers. See? Who have been with us all these years. So Daniel discussed with his friends and they made up their mind. We are not going to defile ourselves. People might think it's a small thing, but to us it's a big matter. But we don't want to kick up a fuss. See? We don't want to go on the streets to demonstrate. See? No, that's not the way to get the point across. All we want is just to be quietly left alone, to not to defile ourselves. We want to worship our God, the true God. We don't believe those gods. So they mustn't force us to eat all this. So what should we do? But they made up their mind that they will make a stand for the truth. They will not compromise in their faith. This is a matter of principle, see. So freedom to believe and practice what we hold to. So don't force us to do what we don't believe. And by keeping to our freedom, we have never encroached upon your freedom. You want to go and do all those things, it's up to you. But please leave us alone. Don't force us to do those things because we don't believe in those things. So Daniel and his friends, although they were given names of the local people, and again, this is in a way understandable. See, you have a foreign sounding name in a culture that's predominantly of those people. You stand out, and those people, they like to make you one of them. So one of the first steps is to depersonalize you. If you stand out too much as a person, it's not good. So if you are taken in prison, for example, you are given a number. So that is to dehumanize you, just a number. So when your number is called, you have to answer. See? So each is given a number. So here, something similar is happening. They come to this culture. Their names is too foreign sounding. They give them a local name. See? And of course, the local names is a reflection of their culture, which is religious. So a religious culture, and therefore the names of a person like Daniel is changed, you see, from the one who feared El, Dani, El, Elohim, the God of Israel, is changed to the God of the people there. But Daniel, deep in his heart, is, I'm Daniel. You call me whatever, but I am Daniel. So here is Belteshazzar. You say Daniel was changed to verse 7. Daniel, the name was Belteshazzar. Then Hananiah was Shadrach. So Shadrach, so Hananiah, we wondering first, oh, that's me. It's me. See? So it takes a while to get adjusted. So okay, superficial names, you may call me this and that. But the point is, when it comes to worship, eating food offered to idols, you know, when you put food to idols, you're like worshipping them, see. So you're taking food, that means you're having fellowship with the idols that you're worshipping. So Daniel and his friends made up their mind that they wouldn't want to do that, you see. So already we have complied. You gave us a name, you see. You know, it's so personal. My name given by my parents, and it's a reflection of our faith in our God. And here you change our names. We have complied. We have not kicked up a fuss up to this point, you see. But when you want us to eat food offered to idols, it's like each time, meal time, you can pray to your God, and then you bring out the food. And we don't want to be part of this. You make us, you're like forcing us to be part of this act of worship. We don't want that. See, but how to convey that across? So Daniel and his friends, they were being indoctrinated, they were being trained, and while many branches of knowledge were useful, they absorbed, they learned, you see, but they want to maintain their faith. Hey, the lesson is very obvious. For a 14-year-old boy, and that was his age around about that time, 14 maximum, 15 around about that time, at that time around, that was their age, you see. To be able to see things clearly and to be able to make up their mind on this point and to make a stand. Understand, convince, act, mind, heart, will. The mind must understand, the heart must be convinced or persuaded, and then the will must decide to act. For a young boy of 14 years old to have that clarity of mind, see, that strength of character to have that persuasion and have that ability to make a stand, the courage to make a stand, is very unusual. But it is possible to find such even today, see, except that there are very few. See, most people at 14 still, you know, playing computer games. Not that it's wrong in itself. See, oh, going to the cinema, oh, doing something that every other youth would do. See, and again, those things are not wrong in themselves. There is a proper place for all this. But to have that ability to understand spiritual things and apply it to their situation, that requires not only knowledge, but wisdom from above. And if you have wisdom but without knowledge, that cannot be. A wise person will acquire knowledge. And you see how in that 3 years they acquired so much knowledge, that so much, and they understood what they were studying, so much that they were better than even their teachers. See, but what we are saying at this point is their spirituality. See, they show that they have true faith in God. And you don't have to wait until you're 24, 34, 44 before you come back. True faith in God. These 14-year-old lads, they already had come to true faith in the Lord. So among the how many? Perhaps 200, perhaps 500 from Jerusalem taken away at that time. We do not know how many. But here these four young men, see, they obviously found fellowship with one another. And they stood by one another. So what was in Daniel's mind was conveyed to his friends, and they had must have prayed. And together they came to the common conviction. The right thing to do is to make a stand at this point on this issue. But we have to do it wisely. We want to be courageous to act, but we must be done wisely. Say, firm and wise. How do we go about it without kicking up a fuss? And then end up with us being punished for no good reason and without us accomplishing the purpose. You have to understand between cowardice, giving excuses, and those who act courageously but wisely. There's a big difference. There are those who out of cowardice give excuses. That's different. See, but here is a wise person who wants to act in such a way as to not to end his life and his ministry too quickly. Yeah, if we die for a good cause, it's okay. But why song sir? Why go and present ourselves to die? You see, dying as a martyr, if it is really called for, if God wants me to die for my faith, then we should be willing to die. But to deliberately seek death over a stupid issue, over our stupidity, then that's not dying for the faith. It's because of your stupidity. See? So you must be very careful and see the difference. So that's why you see the expression song si. You seldom hear this nowadays. See? But you say to people in this part of the world, it'll trigger something. You know, that thought, you know, actually is deep in our culture. Song si. We don't want the song si. We must use our intelligence. We don't willingly but foolishly go and lay down our lives, throw away our lives. That's more the expression, to throw away our lives. See, we don't want to do that. That's not martyrdom. See, that's throwing away our lives. Our song is different from martyrdom, you know. Martyrdom is a person who wisely preserves his life for long as possible, but not to run away for fear. You run to preserve your life in order to preach. You don't run in order to keep silent. If Martin Luther were to keep silent, the devil would have been very happy. But Martin Luther did not keep silent. He continued to proclaim the truth. The Apostle Paul ran when they wanted to kill him. But he did not run in order to be silent and to hide, to pretend that he's somebody else. No! Wherever he went, he preached. He proclaimed the gospel. He showed to people who he was. He's a messenger of the Lord Jesus Christ, the apostle to the Gentiles. So you run to preserve your life so that you can serve the Lord longer. Why run and be so frightened and hide your identity and you don't preach? Then Satan scored a victory. See, so Daniel was very wise. See, and it's a challenge to us. You see, at this age, how old are you? Some of us, we know we are sunset years of our lives. Yeah, God may preserve us longer. We don't want to waste any time left. There was this preacher who had cancer, and he was told he had a few years to live. He decided to live his years well. See? And the Lord has preserved him for over 20 years. Thankfully, he didn't waste his time and didn't say, I'm dying, and so therefore did nothing. So we may be old, we may be in the sunset years of our lives, but who knows, the Lord preserves me another 20 years, 30 years of useful service. I don't want to waste away this 20, 30 years of useful service and on the last day say, I wish I had not thought I was dying. I wish I had continued serving the Lord even though I knew I was dying. See, but what about the majority who are still young? It's a challenge to you. See, have you that wisdom that Daniel had, that conviction? He had right knowledge and he has conviction and he has the courage to make a stand. And here we are, older people, trifling away our time, our years. See? And you say, but I've been to Sunday school from young and I've read the Bible. But what are you like now? Are you like Daniel? A mature, wise young man, see, who knew how to behave himself and had the courage to make a stand when needed. See? It's a challenge to us all, to the young, to the adults, and to those who are older in years. And I tell you, the whole book of Daniel, and including today's passage, is going to challenge us across the broad spectrum, whether you're young, you're middle-aged, or you're old-age. It's going to challenge us. See, I remember our style of preaching, we depart a little from the traditional Puritan method where all the doctrine is given at the beginning and all the applications at the end. We apply as we go along. See? And it's uncomfortable, I know. From the start, your heart is being searched. We are made to consider, where do we stand in the light of this truth? See, but it's good for our souls. It builds us up. It keeps us on our toes. And that is good.
And this type of spiritual exercise strengthens us in the faith, challenges us, makes us more useful people before the Lord. See,
Daniel's life and his friends, Daniel and his friends' life challenges us as to the reality of our faith and the quality of our faith.
See, hey, the years have gone by and you spend your time not growing in understanding and in usefulness in the Lord's service. Don't cry over spilled milk. Past is past. Learn starting from today. Starting from today, waste no more time, waste no more opportunity. Say, commit the past into the Lord's hands. Say, Lord, I've wasted my years. In name I've been a Christian. I've been doing this and that, but with no substance, no usefulness. Say, going from church to church, hopping from here to there, with no stability, no growth. Say, don't be like that. Let that be past. Let's have a new start. Learn from Daniel and his friends. So this lesson has to be pressed home. Say, press home for our good. We need that. We don't want to be just Christians in name. No, there must be genuine faith. Remember, in the midst of the Babylonians, there were many Israelites there who in name were the people of God, Jehovah. But here were four young men who quietly knew that they were even different. They were different even from their own countrymen who did not quite bother. In name, they were believers. But Daniel and his friends, these four persons, it is like they have covenanted to be together. They will stand out. Even among the Babylonians, of course, they stood out. But among their own countrymen who were there, they also did not want to be part of them. They want to compromise. It's up to them. But for us, we make a stand for the truth, even though we are small in numbers. That's what they did. And again, the truth is not on the side of the big numbers. It's a teaching of Scripture. It comes across again and again. See, of course, error can come from just one individual. One drop only of poison into a glass of water can spoil the whole glass. See, so sometimes one individual just spread his newfound teaching. Yeah, he has a brainwave. He comes up with a slant. Huh. And then he begins to spread his teaching. That can happen. We don't want to be caught by such people. Don't want to be influenced by such. But we ourselves must know what is the Bible's teaching and be convinced and make a stand. There is Daniel and his friends. That covers a summary of the first part to bring us to the second part. And today our focus is on this second part. Daniel and his friends made a stand. See? So the word defile in verse 8 is important. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. He purposed, that's another key word. But let us look at the word defile first. See? It shows that this food has been offered to idols right before their eyes. They knew it, everyone knew it, they could see it. And it was part of their beliefs that as they ate of this food, they were having fellowship, they were having close interaction with their pagan gods. And therefore, Daniel and his friends felt uncomfortable. Their conscience were pricked if they were to eat that. I cannot. We cannot be part of this. See, it troubled them. And then, after being clear, he must have prayed, he must have talked to his friends, because you see the decision was the decisions of the four friends. So certain things the Bible don't tell us, but it's so obvious. You don't have to say everything. Okay? You can jump a few steps, but to arrive at this present step, you have to go through three or four steps. So when suddenly Daniel and his friends made the stand, okay? You have to draw the clear, obvious conclusion. Along the way, Daniel and his friends have been discussing this, and they have been bringing this before God in prayer, and they were all of the same conviction. We will make a stand. They purposed in their hearts. See? That means it was not a rash action. It was not based on some young, fiery ideals. No. It's really a settled, prayerful, thought over sort of decision, the purpose in their hearts. So those two words are very important. First, understand what it means to be defiled. Secondly, what it means that the purpose in their hearts. See? And the king gave good food. It was provided for this elite. It was a special group of students in this special university being trained specially for the king. So the king gave the best. Look at the food. The king's delicacies. The king himself ate those. Wow, like that. We were told, you know, the dates that we buy, you know, Ramadan time, we go and shop. Ah, some of us like dates. Ha, tasty. So you see the variety that comes out. You see? But you didn't know, just like in when it comes to durians, Musang King, it's very costly. But the dates also, only the sultans eat those. Wow, when we hear that, we who are not connoisseurs of all this, we don't appreciate it. It tastes roughly the same. See? But you ask a person who doesn't appreciate durian, you don't know the difference between Musang King and the Kampung durian and so on. Wow, you don't know how much you are missing. So as you get tuned to the idea, as you get initiated, soon you realize, yeah, big difference. Oh, if you have to choose between the ordinary durian and Musang King, of course you want your Musang King. See? And so similarly, we were told that to the sultans, only special dates were for them. So that's why it's extremely expensive and difficult to get. See? Ah. But here were the king's delicacies being served to these young people who were being trained. The king did not mind. See? Treated them well and gave them all the nice food, the delicacies with the wine, which he drank. Just take note. From the king's own kitchen, you know. It's not from a company that supplies and you supply some to the others. So that is already very good. But the king is saying, take this and bring this to these youngsters for them to drink, to eat. So what he drank, they had. See? And so what happened is that Daniel, they all made up their mind. No, we wouldn't. And then what happened is, you discover, verse 9, now God had brought Daniel into the favor of the goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. So the words are very precise. See? Daniel got into the favor among the eunuchs who served the king of Babylon. The chief of the eunuchs, that means the chief officer in charge of them all. See? So for some reason, see, God showed favor, see, to Daniel, such that his behavior was noted by this chief eunuch. The way he behaved was such that he was favored by this chief eunuch. And again, this is not unusual. Certain people just have that, you know. We can't be like them. They seem to get on well wherever they go, see. And they are not people who come to make a nuisance of themselves, stick to you, be nice to you, try to be attention-seeking. No. In fact, the reverse will happen. The more attention you seek, the more people feel, hey, pesky person, you know, he just wants attention. But no, not Daniel. There are such people, young people, who seem to get on everywhere, and people quietly respect them. They know these are people with substance. Give them some time, give them the opportunity, they will excel. They will leave the pack behind. You know the expression, a pack. Say, let us say, consider raising dogs or raising horse or whatever. Say, they are running together, one big pack. See, but soon one stands out. He's ahead by how much? Oh, only one meter. Give him some time. You discover he's 100 meters ahead of them. Give him some time, some more. He has run one lap more than the rest. See, these are individuals who will excel. But this person, Daniel, he excelled. Not because he pushed himself, menunjulkan diri, attract people's attention, make a nuisance of himself. See? No. He did not seek fame, he did not seek popularity, but God gave it to him. What he did was he seek his God. That's why seek not fame for yourself. Seek God, and fame will be given to you if it is his will. See? And you will be able to handle it, because God is the one who gives you fame, gives you opportunities, say, gives you favor. Say. So the more important is to seek to know your God. Say. That's why we are worried about people who put the emphasis on the wrong things. Even in Christian circles, in theology, see, there are those who say, enjoy God. Seek enjoyment. God wants you to enjoy Him. While the concept enjoyment in itself is not wrong, but you isolate it and you portray it as something to be desired and to be pursued, when actually it is a fruit, it is a product, it is like good works. You can't try to do good works in order to be saved, but you must first have faith in Christ, true faith. And when there is true faith, you discover your life gets transformed. And with a bit of guidance and teaching from the Bible, you discover you are doing plenty of good works. The good works are the fruit of faith. You must have faith first, otherwise all these good works count for nothing. So don't put the cart before the horse. Pursue faith first, then there will be the fruit of good works. And similarly, the enjoyment of God. You pursue the enjoyment of God, you can't find it. You artificially generate a lot of attention about enjoyment of God, but it's not the genuine thing. See? And what has gone wrong? Because some guru somewhere, you know, he has a smart idea. He come up with a book and then spread it. See? And people chase after this. And they begin to seek for enjoyment of God. When the old evangelical teaching is to obey God, know His word and joyfully obey. Obey willingly. And you discover as you seek to know God's will, you obey, trust and obey. Trust and obey. Trust God. Obey Him. And you discover the enjoyment comes. You discover God smiling upon you. His favor is upon you. One opportunity opens and another opportunity comes. People are wondering, hey, how come this person seems to be having all the opportunities? And the reason is he did not pursue the opportunities themselves. He pursued God first. Pursue God. Pursue obedience. Then the enjoyment will come. So similarly, Daniel, you see, favor was given to him, not because he went around seeking favor. That would have made him not in any sensible man's favor, but because he's a young man who knew his God. He has values, he has principles. See, the way he carried himself is such that he was not there to please anyone, and yet he was a pleasing personality. Ah, what did you say? He was not pleasing anyone, and yet he was a pleasing personality. How could that be? Yes, my friend, it's possible. We have seen cases and cases of this. There have been many around. See, those who don't seek attention, those who just seek to do what is right, somehow they stand out. Somehow, see, without gaining favor, they are in the favor of many people. This was Daniel. Daniel was one such person. So Daniel nicely went forward to make his stand known to the chief eunuch, and that is wisdom as well, because certain things you can't go through the lower levels. This type of thing will create misunderstanding. They will be thinking wrongly that you are just kicking up a fuss over nothing. See, but you have to meet the people who have the ability to see the principle involved and why it upsets you so much. So he went directly to the chief of the eunuchs. See? And God has along the way paved the way such that Daniel was in his favor. And so he talked to the chief of the eunuch, the chief officer. See? And the chief officer nicely, you see, he wasn't rough with Daniel. He was so kindly to this young man. Imagine a 14-year-old man approaching perhaps a 50, 60-year-old man. Yeah. See, the tendency would be to look down on this young man. But no, this young man, Daniel, has found favor with this officer. Along the way, he liked this young man and he respected this young man. See? And when approached, he was very understanding. But he gave his point of view. And you see the difficulty in this chief officer in verse 10. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink. See? He put the case clearly to him. See? I'm serving the king whom I fear. And he's the one who assigned you directly the food and drink from his own kitchen. So for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Yeah. So you don't eat this food, then surely it's going to affect your health. And the king will be able to see this. Yeah. Then who would he blame? See, then you would endanger my head before the king. My head, you know, kepala. Pancong kepala. See, many cultures in those days as punishment, you see. Person is taken up, the head is just chopped off. Doesn't sound nice, but we have to explain so that you get the picture. This man was like, not only was his job at stake, his life was at stake. Just imagine. So he nicely put it before Daniel and said, this is my situation. So, but he didn't say, no, you stop. He didn't suppress Daniel. See, Daniel got the cue. Again, you must read very carefully and see the dynamics of the interaction. Because in real life, this is what happens. Okay? In real life, we know that this is what happens. The top man might not say an outright no, but he's explaining his difficulty. But he might need time to think over. But nevertheless, you see, there's no clear-cut no, Daniel. From now on, please don't utter a word about this matter or any such rough words to him. No, he's just saying, you put me in a difficult situation. You know, it's not just my job that is at stake, my life, you know. See? But having nicely put it to Daniel, it seems that the way Daniel reads is that, okay, thank you for at least not rebuking me and not shutting the door on my face. You see, thank you for the indication. I take the cue. And so what did Daniel do? He took the cue, okay? The next step is, verse 11, he said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuch has set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And again, very politely and clearly, Daniel put his request to this lower down level. And obviously the lower down level officer knew that Daniel had approached the highest. And therefore, when Daniel came to him, he was open to his suggestion. You see the dynamics of human interaction here? And Daniel came to say to this person below the chief, okay, below the chief, this one is directly in charge of them. Daniel nicely put it to them, see? He did not demand. Instead, he said, please, test your servants for 10 days. Let them give us vegetables to eat, water to drink, that's all. Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. You compare after 10 days, see. If we are any worse, of course we have to comply to you. We know your life is danger, not only your job. So we will comply to you and we will do what else. We'll decide what else to do after that, see. I don't know what, maybe we'll suffer for it. We will have to go to jail or maybe in prison for, even, you know, the king might even say, chop off their heads, but that will come later. But for ourselves, for the moment, we just want you to be reasonable, test us for 10 days, then compare us with all the other young men. If we are any worse off, we will decide what we want to do after that. We just give a hypothetical question, if the servant had not allowed, see, and Daniel and his friends turned out to be worse off, what would they have done? I would say they would still not compromise. They would think of another course of action. And what course of action they were going to take, they left it to God for the moment, one step at a time. So that is why in seeking guidance from God, you can plan for the future. You can plan, and often we should make forecasts and project to the future, see, but always saying God willing, if God so wills, don't think that it will definitely happen. But the next thing to do is, what is the immediate thing that I should do, that I should be doing? If you don't take the first step in the journey, you're not going to make the journey at all. So that's why in seeking guidance, although we think ahead and think of the possible consequences and so on, Nevertheless, what is the first step that needs to be taken? The things in the future is still future. Many things can still happen. That's why as we plan based on what we know, we realize many things have still to be known. We don't know yet. See? That's why when we plan for the future, we say, God willing. We don't say, it will happen like this. When I go to that city, I do this, then I will get this and get that. No. Always say, God willing. God willing. In your heart, you say, God willing. This is what will happen. But the immediate thing is, what should I do? What is the first step in seeking guidance from God? Based on what we know currently, what should I do? If the first step is not taken, how would you know the second step? It is only when you take the first step, after prayerfully considering everything, asking counsel from wiser people, and along the way, you do have to make a decision. Then when you take the first step, you begin to know, these things has happened and that thing has happened. These other new things come in as factors that you take into consideration for the second step. So you must do what you are able in the first step. So Daniel did just that. He approached the servant who is below, the chief eunuch, and this servant was directly in charge of them. He said, give us this test and you see for yourself. We don't want all this meat which have been offered to the idols. We don't want all this luxurious food that has been offered to idols. See? We just want you to give us vegetables. And don't wrongly conclude that here vegetarian diet is better than non-vegetarian. Then you are wrong. Okay? The principle involved is compromise in your faith. And the principle is spiritual in nature. It has to do with your faith. And because of the word defile earlier, and knowing the background of Babylonian culture, we know that those food were actually served to their idols and then brought in. See? And therefore you are like having a meal together with all the spirits, see, all the demons, all the gods that they worship. See? And Daniel and his friends wouldn't want to have anything to do with that. So what choice have they? Because all meat were always offered up. See? Give us just vegetables. And water. Vegetables, of course, would include fruits and other things like that, of that nature. So what did they do, Daniel and his friends? They were given the opportunity to just test it out for 10 days. And 10 days can make quite a noticeable difference. 10 days, how to tell the difference? I tried to lose weight, I still haven't succeeded. But you didn't try properly, you see. Huh? You say, how, in what way proper? You say, have you tried? If I haven't tried, I wouldn't have told you. You cut down your rice by half. See? I don't say cut down totally. That's wrong move, wrong way. You cut down totally, you discover you are deprived suddenly of carbohydrate. You discover the yearning. Soon you go back to carbohydrates. Just make up your mind, cut by half. In 10 days, it makes such a big, drastic difference. But cut half, then what do? Then I eat bread and other, no carbohydrates. Replace with drinking plenty of water, eating fruits, vegetables. Oh, like that. Soon you discover this new diet where half your rice is taken off. You discover in 10 days it makes such a big difference. Prove it yourself and you begin to understand why it is Daniel in 10 days, he and his friend really showed a difference. But difference in what way? Losing weight, slimming down? No, this is our problem today. They have to keep themselves healthy, look fat, look well. Wow, opposite. Opposite of what we want to achieve. But the basic principle is the same. The diet can make us look different in 10 days. Yes. So since our problem is slightly different, our problem is that of overeating, we want to lose weight, then do that and in 10 days you see a difference. And that way you're able to keep up. See? You don't harm your health. So you're still taking half your carbohydrate. And you're feeling your stomach and your stomach feel comfortable. You feel full, satisfied with the meal. But back to Daniel. The purpose is different. You just eat vegetables. Hey, wait. Vegetables is a general term here covering all non-meat, non-dairy type of substance. Oh, like that. So it would include actual vegetables. Then it would include fruits. See, it would include beans. And for Daniel and his friends, there must be that wisdom to know that if you cut down on meat, protein, you have to replace with protein from vegetables. So what vegetables have proteins? You know, beans have proteins. Ha! You cut down perhaps from the fat and other things, but you have to make up somehow, you have to look healthy. See? So you have to eat the appropriate type of vegetables, perhaps potatoes, carbohydrates. Ha! See? So the beans and carbohydrates and the roughage, and then the fruit sugar instead of those stuff from the meat. So you discover they kept healthy. And we are told they look fat. Fat doesn't mean fat in our sense. You know, that is an expression even in some of our Eastern cultures. We say the baby is fat. Is it what we mean? Like the baby is chubby, healthy. Yeah? Instead of skinny, skin and bone. Yeah. So Daniel and his friends look fat in that sense. Fat not in the sense that they are clumsy and full of fat. No. What it means is that they look good. They are very healthy. And the servant, after the end of 10 days, he's convinced, hey, in fact, you're looking even better than them. I say, okay, you can continue having your diet. So they got their way by being wise. And by not giving up, first time when they saw the chief officer, they didn't get easily discouraged. They tried, but they got a cue. This is not an outright no. So in other words, what do? You be pandai-pandai lah, be smart lah. You say, you don't know what I'm trying to say to you? I'm saying this without words to you. I'm just saying, you know, you put me in a difficult situation. Say, I might lose my head over this, you see. But there's no outright no, there's no rebuke, there's no saying you don't raise this matter ever again. There's nothing like that. Say, so Daniel got the cue. He's a wise man indeed, young man. He got the cue. So he pursued it with the servant directly in charge of them. And he placed it before them, before him, and said, test us up for 10 days. And then along the way, you discover the 10 days in the diet, the wisdom of Daniel, they look good. Look, when tested, say verse 13. So in verse 15, at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate a portion of the king's delicacies. See? So the servant was convinced. Okay, good. It seems to work. So from now on, you can have your diet. So Daniel was going to, and his friends, they were going to keep themselves healthy and yet not defile their conscience. See? They made a stand. And how does it apply in our situation? We are faced with different situations. Have there been times when you know your conscience is not clear? This matter, I can't do it. But you compromise. Okay. And you hurt your conscience. Then you discover along the way, other things begin to be affected. Our lives are linked. It's like a pearl, a chain of pearls. You pull one pearl, you discover the next pearl come to you. Pull. See? For better, for worse. If you do the right thing, good pearls will come to you. You do wrong things, you discover. See? One sin will lead to another. You lie once, you have to lie a second time to cover the first lie. And then you lie, the lie gets bigger. You see? One lie leads to another. It happens. So that is why. Live with a clear conscience before God and before man. When the Apostle Paul was tried before Festus Felix Agrippa, he declared to these leaders, see, I've always tried to live with a clear conscience before God and before man. Okay. No doubt when we look back, we know that we have not done all things well. There were times when we were struggling and we gave in, we were weak. But when our years are nearly over, it would be good to look back and know that we have very little regrets. See, God has been good because we made up our mind from early, like Daniel and his friends, that we will not want to hurt our conscience. Like the Apostle Paul, we want to live with a clear conscience before God and man. See, like Hezekiah, remember, he did what was right, good and true before God. From God's word, he knows this is right, good and true. Then the next thing is he did it with all his heart. He didn't do it half-heartedly. Then the third thing we know is that God prospered him. Hey, you got it now? People always look for secrets to success. And here, when the secret is revealed, he says, not worth the money. But do you believe it is the secret to spiritual success, the secret to living a blessed life? Do what is right, good and true before God, and do it with all your heart, and God will be the one who prosper you. And here was Daniel and his friends. They understood. They must not harm their conscience. They want to do what was right. But they did it in a very wise way, and in a firm way, and they did not give up. First meeting with the officer, the top officer, they could have wrongly concluded, like that, then okay, we have done what we could. But no, didn't you read carefully? The officer was giving you the cue, you know, the indication. You have to pursue it further. See? And so he pursued it further, and in such a way that the servant was convinced. See? So thank God that there is this example of Daniel and his friends who made a stand, and who had the wisdom, and who persevered, never giving up. See? And God prospered them. God prospered them. So, in your own situation, how old are you? Some are old, some are not so old, some are young. See, whichever category we belong to, see, we see that there are certain common principles that apply for all life, all of life. If you learn early, you benefit early. See, the parents can just impart these values to our children. See? Perseverance in what is right, knowing what is good, right and true before God. See? And persevering in it. Yeah? Doing it with all your heart. Yeah? To have that wisdom to do things without compromising your principles. So do you have principles? See? From early we have to tell our boys, see, remember certain things cannot be measured with money. Things like honor, things like the name of your family, and things like that. See? Honor our God. So we know that we fail, we are not perfect, but the point is from early, if we have these values instilled in us, at least it will be a guide to us in the days ahead. Okay. And you discover among the many, many, really many people around of the same age, you discover with one person, two person, a few individuals here who have principles, they really stand out far above the crowd. So let them run the race, soon they will leave the pack behind. Really soon they will leave the pack behind. See? You say, but, you know, what did you do? We didn't do anything. We committed them to the Lord. We taught them values from the Bible. And we don't know what will happen next. It is the Lord who blesses. So thanks be to our God. And that blessing can be yours as well. So young people, learn from early. And parents, impart such values to your children. See? Get them to seek to know the Lord. Get them to value the Bible's teaching. See? Inspire them to see that there are values that cannot be bought with money. Which all their friends, their peers, their classmates, schoolmates, they are chasing after. See? And we don't have to live like them in order to be blessed. You just wait and see. Be a little bit patient and you see. And soon enough you discover God really blesses us. In ways that they stand amazed, yeah, really, you know. God has been blessing us. And here was Daniel and his friends teaching us this lesson. Yeah. And what happened next? The time for testing came. That's the second, the next part. First part, introduction. Second part, Daniel and his friends seeking to make a stand. Then the next part, the test. The test, then final part is the outcome. So the test came, see. They passed through. They were allowed. Okay, good. You keep to your diet. And God continue. Help them develop. That is an important matter at that point in time. But it was only a tool, as it were, to the next thing. Look at verse 17. As for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding of all visions and dreams. God gives gifts differently. But what we can do, we must do. to pursue with all our heart when we know it is right, good and true. So the opportunity to be in this top university and having no other choice left open to you. You have no choice. The emperor has commanded this to happen, so you have to go. Okay, go. And the scholarship, isn't it? Yeah. Travel, perhaps first class. Go. Go to the capital. See, you have no choice in this matter. So it doesn't affect your faith. Okay, go. And then what is the purpose of your being in this top university? To learn. So they learn well. They excel. They didn't do things half-heartedly. And again, consider how you have lived. If you are a student, how have you studied? You know at the end of the year, there is the exams. The end of the semester, there's the exams. Like it or not, you can't run away from the exams. True? And therefore, what do? Study. But why study half-heartedly? Why didn't you do your best? You may not come up the absolute top, but when you do what you are able to your utmost, each person's ability vary. But most people, your ability is this level, but you don't reach to this level. You're slack. You just do half-heartedly and you arrive there when in fact you can go so far. And you can go so far, but you're slack. You go up to here. But what if this person is slack, he comes here, but you do your utmost, soon you discover you outshine the other person. See, it often happens. And if both do well, you discover one is better than the other. It's okay. What has happened is you have done your utmost for the highest. You know that expression? My utmost for the highest. Check that up. It's the title of a book. My utmost for the highest. And it's from the book of Psalms. See. So young people, straight away, this is a challenge to us. See. If only we have learned this. If only we have been convinced. If only we have been putting this into practice. See. To be all-rounders. Study every subject well. And to the best of our ability. We don't pick and choose. Just like your food. If you just pick what you like, you discover soon you have unbalanced diet. It will affect your health. But here, you have to study all this. You have to pass all this. Why do you just pick what you like and lift out all that you don't like? Along the way, you fail and you do so well in this one subject. And you go around parading. I score in mathematics. But what about your geography, history? What about the other subjects? Oh, fail. See? But you put forward this high marks here as though it's a matter of pride. Oh, you have what sort of distorted values is this? I wanted to say purpose, but it's not purpose. It's distorted values. What value are you? What principle are you putting forward? It's no principle at all. Where you are so good at one, but all those that you are supposed to study, you didn't. And you failed them. But not Daniel and his friends. They knew that they have to pass all these subjects, and therefore they did well in all of them. And as they trusted the Lord and did what they could, you discover God gave gifts. They did well, and Daniel was given this unusual ability to understand dreams and visions. And if God gives you anything extra compared to others, there is a purpose, there's a reason. That's why we don't have to become proud because we have more gifts than other people. And that's why Daniel's friends did not have to be envious of him because they did not have these gifts. They had it to some degree. But God has a different purpose for Daniel. So they want to stick together. They value one another and esteemed one another as better themselves. Soon Daniel was going to be given greater responsibilities with greater privileges come greater responsibilities. To whom more is given, more is required. Daniel was going to face trials. Daniel was the one who is going to be thrown to lions. He's the one who has to interpret the dreams of the king. Now nobody would like to be placed in such a situation. But Daniel was going to be the one. Therefore, don't envy him, my friends. And sure enough, Daniel's friends, they were mature enough. They were good friends. They did not envy him for having this gift above theirs. They knew they needed him. Their survival depended on Daniel in later days. And Daniel never forgot them. When Daniel rose up, he remembered his friends and made mention to the king, and they rose up together with him. Amazing, these four young men, they stuck together. We talk about the three musketeers. We talk about Hang Tuah and his friends. Huh, that type of camaraderie. Huh, in the world, they value, certain people value this, but they don't find it. Often, you see, when somebody gets successful, they forget the others. But in the church, we are supposed to have that. All of us are bought by the blood of Jesus Christ. We belong to the same family. There's no need for envy of one another. And there's no need to be proud when we are given more gifts. We look together as one, one. If your older brother is honored, why are you not proud of him in the right sense? You don't think of doing him down. You don't think of pulling him down. See, if your younger brother is honored, see, the whole family will be happy. See, and we know that each has his gift for God's purpose. It is to edify the church. So here was Daniel. See, Daniel. We move to the last section. The big day of the test. The king personally, together with all his chief advisors, were the examiners. Whether there was oral, written, or practical, plus the oral. The final part is often the oral. See, up to today, you see many systems of examination still follow this system. You have the written part. See, the true, the how much you know, what it comes out, you know, writing. Okay. Then the next part is the practical part, the experiments and how you handle the data and so on. Then the final part is the oral. Just to round up to be sure. Do you have that character to handle all that you have shown yourself to have? You have this knowledge, you have this ability, but where's the EQ? IQ you have. And practical skill you have. But where's EQ, your emotional quotient? People look for IQ and practical efficiency only, but where is EQ? Many are lacking in this area. We want to be all-rounded people. So the king examined just to make sure, hey, you wrote this in your answer to these questions. What exactly do you mean by this? Just to test, to see really you memorize by heart, or you ask your friends, or what. He said, but really it's from you. You know your substance. So as they were examined by the king and his panel of astrologers and the professors of that time, they were found, look at the verse, last verse, 10 times more able than all the people in the kingdom. All, see, 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers were in all his realm. We thought his realm is so huge, you know, stretching from India all the way to Iran, Persia, to the west, to the Mediterranean area. His kingdom is so vast, with so many people, and there are well-known universities, well-known professors, well-known scientists, and so on. But Daniel and his friends, they were found to be 10 times better than anyone in the kingdom. Now, 10 times, of course, is just a round figure to express how good they were. Because this type of thing, you can't measure by numbers. Say, intelligence can't be measured by numbers. Say, but to say they are twice as good as others is already extremely good. But to say that they're 10 times better than others, the best, and the best not only in that city, the best in his whole, not just his country, the whole realm. Remember, this is an empire. See, they were 10 times better than all the rest. Really, you have to draw the conclusion, God has been with them. God is with them. See. And one final point as we close. Verse 21. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. Hey, this is chapter 1 is like an introduction. We are given the details of his rise, his preparation for service. Then suddenly we come to the end. And Cyrus was a Persian emperor. So the Babylon
Babylonian Empire, also known as the Chaldeans, the Babylonians or Chaldeans, they were going to collapse. They were going to be overtaken by the Persians. The Persians will overrun the country and take over. See, Cyrus, the Persian king, see, is mentioned. Daniel was going to serve for how long, do you know? From history we know Cyrus came to power in the year 603. Sorry, earlier we say Babylon attacked in 605. And Cyrus at that time is what is the year, you know? Is the year was 539 BC. So we round it a little so that it's easier to count. Make it 540 BC, right? From some 605 to 540. 605 to 540. 65 years, okay? That means Daniel served in high position in the empire up to Cyrus, the next government, a total of 65 years. Okay? We say you serve 30 years, maximum 40 years, you have time to retire. You have reached the peak. You are the master of the subject. I hope you are. See? I hope many of us here will excel in your field. If you are an accountant, you will be very good at accountancy. If you are an engineer, you will be very good at your engineering. If you are in management, you will be very good at management. By age 45 to age 50, you are at the peak of your career. Then 55 to onwards, you are consulted by people. Then 60, you are waiting to retire. See? Now people want to extend the retirement age. You're still capable of being useful. Why retire so early? Say, so how long can you stretch your service? 40 to 50 years. But Daniel served 60 years. Say, more than 60 years, 65 years. He was 14 when he was taken. Okay. 14 plus 3 years of studies. That means by the time we reached Cyrus' first year, Daniel was over 80 years old. And we say, apply all the way. Scripture is meant for us to learn. See, Daniel was serving the Lord right up to his 80 plus years old. In chapter 10, verse 1, we are referred to Cyrus as in his third year of reign. Daniel was still around, but he occupied this high position until Cyrus first. Imagine such a long ministry. Holding on to the faith. Never saying, I'm dying, I'm useless. Never giving up. When young, we could do certain things. But we couldn't do other things that the older people did. See, for example, married people, they do certain things married people do. You're not married, you can't do. Therefore, focus on what you can do as an unmarried person. Then when you are married, you look back, you say, I can't do those things I was when I was a bachelor. See, in the past, I just went off by myself. You say, now I have to think of my wife, my children at home. Hey, let the past be past. Each phase of life has its opportunities. Then when we are older, we couldn't do the things that we were doing when younger. Never mind. Let that be past. Let the younger people do those things. But we have other things that we can do now when we are older. We say, what? Give examples. Hey, friends. One obvious area is prayer. When we look back in our younger days, we believed in prayer, we did prayer, but we didn't pray enough, we didn't pray sincerely, we didn't pray earnestly enough. Say, shouldn't we be praying? Praying is serving the Lord. Pray for the younger people. Pray for the progress of the gospel. Then another area, even when you are extremely old, see, you still have faith. Your body may be wasting away, but your inner self is renewing, and you are waiting. You know actively inside you, your spirit is being renewed. You are waiting to be called by the Lord to a new phase of your life in heaven. See? So what we can do is we pray for people, and we set the good example for the younger people. Let our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren one day recall our lives and say, great-grandpa, great-grandma was a woman, a man of faith right to the end. And that is tremendous witness. And do you know how many lives you will touch? And how that will be used by God to draw them to faith in Jesus Christ? In younger days, we are talking about witnessing to people and how many people we managed to witness to. And among those we witnessed to, how many actually came to faith?
You don't realize that by keeping faith right to the end, you're influencing so many generations of your people, and really, it can be hundreds of people, you know. When three generations meet together on functions, you discover, hey, it's such a big family. When four generations meet together in number of few hundred, say, so your one person can influence hundreds of people down the line, just being good witness, being a good witness. Imagine that can be used as a trigger for how many of them to come to faith. So to the older people, there are lessons for us to learn, and it all has to begin when we are young. And I would like to dwell more on other things, but our time is up. We must see God is sovereign in history. God records this Daniel's life for us to learn. And from the time he was a young man, the trials, the sorrow he went through, the stand he made, how God favored him, and God used him right to old age. And that verse 21 is very striking. When you work out the years, you discover he was already 80 plus years old, close to 80, 85, 88 years old. You come to realize, wow, he was still active serving the Lord. It really is a challenge to us. It's really an encouragement to us. How we must look to the Lord and God, give me good health, and whatever my situation, make me useful in your service. Make me a good witness to the younger generation. Right to the end. Right to the end, the last day. Remember Moses? On the day when he had to climb up the mountain and die there, he was still serving the Lord and instructing the younger people and reminding them of God's word. And as we draw to a close, we really can see God, the sovereign one, in control of everyone's life, controlling people of all nations, controlling individual lives, see, all working out for the good of those who love him, who are the called according to his purpose. And may God be merciful to us all. We close with a hymn.